So if you've followed any of my work, you know that I don't keep my faith a secret or even private. That said, I've also never really talked publicly about my conversion to the Catholic faith. And so I kind of wanted to do that today. I know that to a lot of you who've been following me for a long time, like for years, I sort of just presented as a sort of generic Christian. And then one day I was Catholic, but there was really no explanation of that. And there are a few different reasons, but the main one is that I don't really like to talk about myself on camera. In large part because over time, as I've done this, I've realized that some people get really attached if I do that, and it can become dangerous. It's not really the people who hate you who become dangerous, it's the people who think that they love you. So I am careful to, I don't know, lead with the message that I'm trying to put forth, for the most part, so that, I don't know, the message itself would be the same, would be true regardless of who was saying it. And so that's what I've kind of done in recent years. But I don't think there's a way to talk about one's conversion without talking about yourself. And I also feel like I've kind of been a bit derelict in not making this video sooner. So I did put out a question, I suppose, a few months ago, asking people what questions they would like me to answer in regards to my conversion. And so I do have those. And what I want to do here is start out by talking about my conversion through my eyes, I guess, because I couldn't do it through anybody else's eyes. And then at the end, I'll tackle the questions that I've received. To give you some backstory about my faith, I was raised as an atheist. My father considered himself very sort of rationalistic and reasonable, and that was the reason that he rejected Christianity. So he was sort of the virulent atheist type until he adopted like Wiccanism and then Satanism, which is kind of weird to go from that. Okay, but anyway, that was him. So I was raised an atheist. Around the age of 15, I came to Christianity. I was baptized in an Anglican church. That's the Church of England for those who are in England, at that age. But it wasn't a specific, I don't know, agreement with Anglicanism specifically. I just sort of saw Anglicanism as generic Christianity. I didn't see any sort of difference between the denominations. So basically what you had around me at the time, you know, because you're 15, you can't drive, it is what's around you. I think there was a Methodist church, I believe. I had a friend who was Mormon. There was up the street from me, there was this sort of like what almost like stereotypical warehouse Protestant church. And then on the outside of that, they always had the Hope Not Hate signs, which is like basically Antifa, the English version. And then if I was to walk about a mile and a half, something like that, there was this massive stone building that was just sort of really old school and traditional, and that was the Anglican church. And so, candidly, that was what lured me into it. So it was like this was closer to the real church. And at that age, that was, you know, it was the stone. I confess, it was the stone. So I started going to that church every Sunday and Wednesday. And so that's who baptized me. But they also never gave any sort of real catechesis. So still, upon, you know, joining the Anglican Church and being baptized, I never had any actual education in that particular denomination, if you want to call it that. So it was more like, well, here's a King James Bible, go figure it out and come back on Sunday. Actually, they didn't give me a Bible, but they did herald the King James Bible. The Catholics would give me a Bible, interestingly enough, because I've heard that Catholics didn't read the Bible, but fake news. Anyway, so that was me being baptized at 15 in the Anglican Church. Then I Because of the lack of catechesis and the fact that I basically just saw all denominations as sort of basically the same, I from there just kind of lived as a generic Christian or non-denominational Christian, if you prefer the term, until the point at which I became Catholic, just a few years ago. So that's my sort of branching, atheist to baptized Anglican, but only sort of to generic slash non-denominational, and then finally to the Catholic Church. I do want to say, like, when I announced that I had converted to the Catholic Church, I was really kind of moved at how many people who had watched me for years announced they had been praying for my conversion. That was just kind of, I don't know, unexpected, and yeah, it was really sweet. I will give a disclaimer before I get too far into this, which is to say that I'm not a theologian, so I'm not the best person to explain Catholic doctrine to you. I'm just not. I don't think I ever will be. I only joined the church a little bit less than 3 years ago. So I'm aware of at least some of my own inadequacies in regard to that. But you know, if you actually want to know and explore Catholic doctrine and hear it articulated far better than I can, then you know, you can ask a priest or ask a theologian, neither of which I am or will ever be. So you know, just bear that in mind. There are videos online of people who actually can do this and do this well. I'm just not one of them. I'm here to talk about my conversion, and so some of that will include, you know, the Catholic faith and what the Catholic Church professes. But again, I have my limitations, so bear that in mind. So ultimately, I think one of the more important distinctions is that I didn't convert to the Catholic faith because it was like my favorite flavor. I didn't convert because of the stone. I converted to the Catholic faith because I came to believe that it was true, that the claims that she makes for herself are true. So it wasn't like, oh, she's got the best potlucks, because she doesn't. Or even candidly, the best community. It wasn't about that. It was about something just kind of, I don't know, far bigger. It was instead more about how do I best serve God as he wishes to be served. And when I came to the conclusion that the Catholic Church was the original church and was being guided by the Holy Spirit and has throughout time, that's something that, well, I don't know, it captures your heart and moves you, and it kind of makes you a liar just to reject it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a certain point in which not moving forward with the faith would have been like self-erasure. So there was, when I had reached that point of sort of intellectual conversion, I'm going to call it, that sort of demands your assent, and it did. That was something I couldn't turn away from. Even though there are, you know, there are other churches in my community or in my city that have actually better communities and stuff like that, and it, again, it wasn't me. It's not equivalent to choosing the favorite flavor of food. You know, that's just not what it is. In fact, the Catholic Church puts, I think it's fair to say, gives you more rules to follow, right? There's more that you have to change about yourself in order to become Catholic than there is with a lot of just different denominations. It's just that wasn't the point. It wasn't which is the easiest, which is the nicest, you know, which do I like per se. For me, it was which is true. Now, when I look back on the certain life event, you know, it's like you don't realize what is affecting you until you look back in hindsight. So you look back on an instance like a conversion, and you don't realize all the different things that were happening simultaneously that were changing your heart. And I think you still only see some of that when you look back, but you see very little at the time because we're just so, we have tunnel vision about the present. We always will. And so I think when I talk through this conversion, that's what I see. Now, a big part of my conversion, though, was this work. I've never wanted to speak from a position of ignorance. It's been important to me that I can, you know, that I can speak the truth as articulately as possible. So it's not been just, oh, I want to get in front of the camera and make grandiose or sensationalistic comments online for views like a lot of people do. that just hasn't been enough for me. I have felt, I don't know, underqualified or even unqualified at times doing this, but then I watch other people's videos and I realize that they're much more unqualified. So it's often been, oh, okay, I have to make this video in order to compensate for this person's lack of knowledge because I know no more than that. But also, it's because of the fact that I'm not comfortable being ignorant about something that I'm speaking about, I've taken to study. And so that was kind of instrumental, is that by in the fact that I was speaking about Christendom and the history of the West, you also have to study those things, and if you care, and so I did. And the more that you study the history of the West, the more that you see the Catholic Church in the center of it, and the two just cannot be separated. And it's not that there's ever been a utopian age for the church or for the West, but what you do see is that throughout time, the Catholic Church was that beacon of light within it that was guiding it, and the West was only mattered for as long as it was Christendom, right? It was the fact that it was centered upon God and trying to strive for the good and the true and the beautiful. It was that that raised people above their current times and above their suffering, and gave them that sense of purpose that mattered both on the individual and the collective level. It's what generated so much beauty, is what caused people to spend literally generations building a cathedral that they would never see themselves, because they saw something beyond themselves, because that mattered, because he mattered. And so if you start studying the West, you sort of become, I mean, I don't mean this in an offensive way, but you become less Protestant. And that's what happened to me. I've always been very aware of the deficiencies of my public school education, so I never relied upon that. And I think that was a huge grace in, I mean, honestly, throughout my life, but including throughout the way that I handle research for this project, and ultimately leading to my conversion, which is kind of comical. But when you study this stuff and you come to realize that the Crusades were not an initiatory action, they weren't evil, you realize the Dark Ages weren't that dark after all, and you kind of come to these very different conclusions than what you might have been told when you went to school. But you end up with a more educated understanding, and you end up with a more true understanding, and that's what it comes to. But of course, you have to remember that throughout most of the history, throughout most of the West, there was just one church, right? It was the church, because this was before the Protestant so-called, Reformation, before that revolutionary time in which so many different nuns were beheaded and different atrocities took place. But as a generic Christian, I didn't realize that. I never really reflected upon that. And I think that a lot of Protestants think that all the different Christian denominations are on a more or less equal footing. It's what I believed. But when you realize that instead it was the Catholic Church that was not only just collecting history and writing history and is the reason we have a history, but was the church that existed and continued throughout those first, 1500 years after Christ. And you have the Orthodox Church, which is more complicated. I'll leave that for another time, especially since the number of Orthodox viewers is going to be so small compared to Protestants and Catholics. But when you look at that, it's like, well, okay, so Christ left us this church. He didn't leave us a Bible. He left us a church. And that church continues to this day. I was aware as a Protestant of the fact that the Bible that so many Protestants used was missing some books, what in the Protestant world you refer to as the Apocrypha, right? And so I was always the kind of weird Protestant who had the Apocrypha. I had those extra seven books because I didn't agree, I guess I could to use a, I don't know, a bit of a blasé term there, with Martin Luther's discrediting of those books. I didn't. I thought that was just kind of messed up that throughout most of Christendom you'd have an understanding of the canon of the Bible, and then suddenly you'd have some guy who comes along way later and say, okay, let's marginalize these, and let's also throw out the Book of James. He didn't succeed with the Book of James, but and yes, I'm aware of the history with the different languages, the Greek versus the Hebrew for the Septuagint, and I think that's too far off track, but I was aware of that much in order to sort of reject Luther's influence, but I didn't understand the way that the church was founded by Christ. And that's kind of, I don't know, it's so instrumental, Saint Peter being the first pope, in understanding the Catholic faith both from within and from without. Because, I mean, I think apostolic succession was one of the coolest things that I came to understand. That being that if you have a priest today, and he's made a priest, he's ordained by a bishop who lays his hands upon him, and such, and makes him a priest. But what's interesting about it is the way that we can trace that bishop and when he was made a priest and a bishop, and it goes all the way back to the time of Christ. We have this, and as it's called, apostolic succession going all the way back, and that's honestly one of the cooler things for me. I mean, everybody has their own thing that they just really enjoy. Apostolic succession for me is one of them. It's And I think it's just so integral to understanding everything else, to understanding why a priest can hear a confession and give absolution, and a regular person can. I mean, it's just why a priest can offer mass, and a regular, it kind of is very foundational. And you see apostolic succession, for those who are wondering, a little bit in scripture as well. I mean, sort of, because you've got the very foundations of the church being described, and you've got Matthias being made an apostle without Jesus being present, and you've got Peter there, you've got the laying on of hands specifically mentioned, and all of this. So you kind of you have that foundation. But what's really cool is the way that to become Catholic is to also read from these different church fathers and the like in 100 AD, and there's these earliest of documents, and study them and realize that they're just sort of part of what we call the body of faith, right? And rather than just saying, okay, well, we just have this one Bible as if it sort of fell out of the sky, it's like, yes, we have that, and yes, it's important, and yes, that's our canon and scripture and it's infallible, but we also have so much more through which to understand our faith, and so much interpretation throughout the history by people who gave their entire lives to interpret small passages. Our church fathers, I mean, the writings of patristics are fascinating. Anyway, I'm getting off topic. I'm sorry, I'm rambling. I became more curious about Catholicism directly after I was. I think it was 2020, I believe. I know that the COVID saga had sort of started. I was invited onto a show called The Catholic Current by Father McTague. And before then, I had never really had a sort of direct exposure to a real Catholic. You know what I mean? Growing up in England, I don't think I ever had any exposure to anyone who was Catholic. And he was interesting because he was such a candid priest, as in he spoke about the Catholic faith very unapologetically, like it wasn't something that you had to be ashamed of. And I'd heard, other people online who were just kind of very, I don't know, afraid, I suppose. He wasn't one to sort of tone down what he believed or what the faith was for the sake of ecumenism. And that increased my willingness to study and increase my interest in the faith quite a bit, I would say so. I liked one thing about the Catholic faith that I think some people find as a detraction, which is interesting. I like and liked the fact that the church is so staunch on moral issues in areas in which other churches are tepid, right? I think that so many see that as a negative, like the church is just too rigid or something like that. And for me, and it's, I think especially in an age where relativism rules, you can kind of see that need for solid instruction, for clear direction. The churches that sort of are adjusting to the world aren't really churches at all. They're businesses that are adjusting to what they think is good for the business model, right? Is good for bringing in customers. But I don't think that's actually a good. And I think that a church that was attempting to serve God would have to be rigid, because for God to be God, he has to be the source of morality, the source of the value system. And therefore, so a church that was following him would have to be explicit about such things. And I think that if you look at the world around us, you see what happens when you have an absence of so-called rigidity, which I think I would use the term rigidity nowadays without meaning it as a detraction. I would mean it as a positive, because I think that's what we need more of, more firmness and less lukewarmness, if you like. I was around the same time, because this is where you have this sort of overlap of different things. I was talking on video about how the Protestant understanding of works, of what you do, has manifested in what we see in contemporary culture, which is to say that the idea that your works don't matter, that it doesn't matter what you say and what you do in terms of your faith and your relationship to God, I think that's a negative in terms of what we see in the world, what we see in the United States, which is obviously a very Protestant culture. And I realize that not all Protestants believe that, but a lot of them do. They believe there's an entire disconnect between your works and what you do and your relationship with God. And I do want to be clear here. It's not true that Catholics think that you can work your way into salvation, that they believe, or we believe, that we are saved only through Christ. But we also believe that we have the free will, that you can choose by your actions, by your sin, if you like, to reject him. And I think that's so important. I mean, and why this matters is because I think you can sort of judge a tree by the fruit it bears. And so that's the sort of relationship here I'm talking about with terms of faith and the sort of environment in the world that it results in. You can kind of judge the merit of the original by what comes from it, if you like. And again, I'm sure there are others that have better articulated that, but I think you know what I'm saying here. Like every modern convert, I think I watch tons of videos by Father Schmitz online, who sort of takes on the sort of basic theological questions and explains them a lot better than I could, if you're interested in that. But that was something that I did for a really long time before actually converting to the faith. It was just these basic questions of what do Catholics believe about confession? What do Catholics believe about this? How do you pray a rosary? It was just those questions that I wanted answered before I was, I don't know, I don't want to say willing to assent, but before I could say, okay, so the things that I thought were true were not true. Because that's the thing, as a Protestant, I believed a lot of things about the Catholic faith that just were not so. I'm just a person who spends probably too much time online, so I joined the Coming Home Network, which is a message board, and shared and asked questions to other people who were, as they call it, coming home to Rome, but they were co converting to the Catholic faith. Now, eventually, after I'd intellectually accepted the faith, I wanted to go to Mass, which is, I'm just going to call it a Catholic Church service. I'm trying to use like neutral language here, because I realize that there are a bunch of people across the spectrum who are watching this. And so that was a, oh gosh, it was a huge experience for me. So I had sort of Catholic, I had intellectually accepted the claims that the church makes for herself. I had intellectually accepted, for example, that she was the church that Christ founded, that she's a church that's being guided throughout time by the Holy Spirit. So, And so from that, you sort of you can assent to the other things that the church teaches that are not con they're not contradicted by scripture. This is an important part of our faith. So I want to go to mass, and I end up going. Basically, I want to go for my birthday, like a weird self-birthday present, I know. And I didn't realize that Catholics have masses available every day of the week. So I wanted to go like basically as close to my birthday as I could. So I went on the Sunday closest. And it was, I'll just go ahead and tell you about my first mass experience, even though that was one of the questions. Sorry. So I go there and I'm kind of confused. I sit at the back row. I've already watched videos online of masses number four, but I'm, kind of nervous and awkward. So I sit at the very back pew, and the priest is African and he has this strong accent. I don't mean he's black. I mean he's actually an immigrant from Africa, and he has a very strong, thick accent. The sound system in the church that I was in was kind of terrible at the time, so it resulted in me basically being unable to understand the priest. These different things came together like that. But I, sat there, went through the masses, did the kneeling, standing thing in accord with what everybody else was doing. I recognized the Our Father, that is the Lord's Prayer. And so these different little elements, I'd heard online that if you go and you're not Catholic yet, so you're not receiving communion, that you can go up to the priest and you put your hands, crossed across your chest, and the priest will give you a blessing instead. But I wasn't comfortable enough to do that because I was like, this is information from the internet and it might be wrong. And so there was this older woman who was sitting back there, like near, I think this second from the back pew. And so I asked her, I was like, hey, is it true that you can? And she's like, yeah, go. And so I went up and I got the blessing and all of that. And so I was completely confused throughout this first mass, and I didn't understand the priest. But it was huge for me because I felt the presence of God there. And that's something that, I mean, I can't talk about because I don't know what I don't know what to say. But as I said, I'd already intellectually accepted the faith, but it was that point at which it kind of stole my heart too. So that evening, I went to the website of that particular parish, and I found the email address for, who you're supposed to write to if you want to join the church. And so I found the email address, and it was like 11 o'clock at night or something, and I sent this email saying that I wanted to join. If I can find the email, I'll put it on screen. And the guy who was running that program, his name was Greg. He gave me a call, and that was a couple of days later. And he told me that, the next RCIA session would be the next day in which I could start in the classes that would allow me to join the church. RCIA meant Rite of Christian Initiation for adults. Now they're calling it OCIA for some weird reason, which is Order of Christian Initiation for adults. So you do these classes because they don't want you to actually join the church without understanding what the church even believes. You should know what you're assenting to if you're going to join the church, which makes sense. And I gained a lot from it, not just in terms of knowledge, though I did, but also I gained some dear friends from the experience. And so, yeah, I'm glad to have had the opportunity to do that. So I was doing that once a week for several months, and finally, I joined the church. I was confirmed, received into the church, would be a more proper term, on April 16th, 2022. So, and honestly, it's undoubtedly been the best decision of my life. I couldn't be happier about that part of my life. Okay, so let's get to your questions. Did E. Michael Jones have any influence on your decision? No. But I will say that Michael Voris did, from Church Militant. And that's kind of an uncomfortable thing because he's been involved in his own scandals since. But you see, I was watching, this was all around the same time that everything else that I mentioned was happening. I kept coming across these church militant videos in which Mark Alvarez would rail against the scandals in the church and the way they weren't being dealt with properly. And he would just rant and rave. It was just like a really angry guy. Some people like that kind of commentary on YouTube and other sites, and some people don't. But he just really went kind of into it with sensationalism. I don't think very much charity towards those that he was accusing. But what I found fascinating was that he'd do this stuff for months and months and months, and he'd complain, but he would never leave the Catholic faith. And for me, coming from a Protestant background, it's like just walk up the street to a different church if you don't like your church, because that's what people do. You know, you don't like Pastor John, you just move on. But he didn't. And the fact that he didn't, the fact that, you know, his entire organization was filled with people who were Catholic and yet railing against these issues, valid issues within the church, well, that was fascinating to me. And so the very fact that they, it showed me that something was different about the Catholic Church. And so that was something that did affect me. But no, I didn't hear about you, Michael Jones. That I didn't even hear about him until after I had joined the church. And still, he doesn't influence my faith at all. Are you okay with the church's activities regarding support for illegal aliens? Do you see that as a biblical obligation? Kind of a huge question. I'm doing a speech on this soon, I believe. It's more complicated than that. No, I don't think we should encourage illegal immigration. It has been the classical understanding of the church that a nation has a right to enforce its borders, and it has that right because it has a duty to the citizens there within to protect them from, you know, from threats from without, right? So there's that balance there. I mean, it is true that we should treat everybody in light of their humanity, that we should, you know, treat them with respect and human dignity. But that does not mean that we should have an open borders policy. And there have been some charities, and especially Catholic charities, I talked about in a different video, that hasn't done that. And because of that, they're encouraging massive atrocities to take place, including against immigrants who are coming in, who are being smuggled in, who are being used as sex slaves and sex trafficking victims, and being abused in horrific ways because of certain activities that we're encouraging, and that has to stop. And I'm not ashamed to speak against that. I don't think it's against the Catholic faith to speak against that. In fact, the opposite is true. Have you been to a traditional Latin mass? What are your thoughts on it? Yes, my first traditional Latin mass that I went to, I was confused. I was confused. I was lost. I didn't really know what was happening. I barely understood where we were when they did the Our Father because I recognized a couple of the Latin words. I recognized the word for bread. It's like, okay, okay, I got it. Daily bread. Okay, you know. And it was at a church that I've been to since, and I don't think they do the Latin Mass particularly well there, so I don't really go to that Latin Mass. So I think part of it was the church that I went to, part of it was that I was just so new as a Catholic that I was just completely lost. So I didn't like the first Latin Mass that I went to, and I concluded for a while that I just didn't like the Latin Mass. And then I was taken by a friend to a different Latin Mass at a different church, and this was, I don't know, probably a year after I joined the church, maybe 6 months. And I fell in love with it there. It's difficult to explain this to people of all different denominations and everything, but it's quite simply, I can pray at the traditional Latin Mass in a way that I can't pray at a Sunday Novus Ordo parish, because the latter feels too much like a performance. Like everybody has their thing to do and they're constantly moving around. And in the traditional Latin Mass, there are just these places for silence and for prayer. And so even though there's no Latin Mass around me, I'll try to go there at least once a month just for the sake of my soul. I can pray better at a Novus Ordo daily Mass just because it is calmer. And there is that, I don't know, there are those times for peace, which is kind of, I mean, ought to be fundamental. Virtually every convert I've heard who eventually entered the one true church did so after going back in history and reading the early church fathers. Did you follow this path? No. No, I mean, I did do reading, I mean, like about the history of the West, but I didn't actually study the church fathers. I didn't study patristics until after I had joined the church, which really helped to sort of cement my love of the church and strengthen my faith. But it's not what led me there, because I just didn't have the experience. It's one of those things where if you don't know anything, you don't even know where to look to know something. And so I kind of wish that I had had that experience, that I had had that access to the church fathers that I've had since. I mean, I love the Epistle to Diognetus. And you know that just came up in one of my patristics courses, and I just kind of fell in love with it. It's just stuff like that that I kind of, I don't know, I wish I could have sort of inserted earlier in my conversion journey, but alas, in God's providence, we found our way here anyway. So, next question. What were your main stumbling blocks? Pope Francis was my main one, candidly. And part of that was that I had a Protestant understanding of the Pope and especially of papal infallibility. So I believed, as a Protestant, that what Catholics believe is that the Pope is essentially God on earth, and everything that he says is infallible and has to be followed by all Catholics, else they're not Catholic. That's what I believed. That isn't true. And that knowledge that it isn't true is really important, because it's like, well, I can see things that he's saying that are just obviously erroneous. And how can that be if he's also infallible? And so just the realization that that's not what Catholics believe about papal infallibility. We do believe that he can make an infallible ruling. But there's some, I mean, he hasn't made one. For starters, like if you look at Pope Francis, he's never made one. And they are so incredibly rare, and there are specific requirements set up for an infallible ruling. And really, those things, the infallible rulings that are made to just to declare something that the church has always believed. Right? It's not just like, oh, we suddenly believe this new thing now. It's like, no, this is in the continuity of the church, and we're stating it now, sort of putting it in stone, so to speak, because there's been some new error, some new confusion about this specific thing. You'll find that. So correcting that, I mean, and a lot of the areas in which I don't know, I found to be stumbling blocks were because I just didn't fully understand what Catholics believed. I thought that I did, but then I was wrong, and I was glad to be wrong. So I was like, okay, that makes sense. I think Mary may have been a stumbling block for me, at least a little bit. I didn't understand a lot about what Catholics think about her, and I didn't have a strong emotional attachment. Candidly, I mean, this is getting too much about me, but I still don't have a strong emotional attachment to our Blessed Mother. I don't have a problem with any of the doctrine of the church or the dogma of the church regarding who she is. Just for clarification, Catholics don't worship Mary. They do revere her for her the incredible position that she took and takes, but they don't worship her. They don't think that she is God. For example, we also don't worship statues. If that's one of the common objections. So it's these different like areas where there's a misunderstanding about what Catholics believe, and so that kind of results in a lot of, I don't know, animus and confusion that's unnecessary, because when you realize, oh, okay, they don't actually believe that everything the Pope says is infallible, or they don't actually believe that Mary is essentially a female god. You know, it's those areas. What traditions did or do you have trouble understanding and accepting? I still do, and always have had issues with private revelations. And that's an area that the church kind of says if you don't have to believe it for the sake of your salvation does not depend on private revelations. And these are these cases in which either holy people believe that they've gotten messages from God, or we have different apparitions of Mary, as you'll hear. There are cases, there are major apparitions where lots of people saw them, and the church spent decades investigating their validity. And for some of those, the church will say, yes, this is worthy of belief. But even then, as a Catholic, you don't have to, you don't have to believe it. It can be considered a pious practice to do so, but you don't have to. So, myself, I tend to lean more into the skeptical area for private revelations, whereas I know certain people who just they love it, that they get really into it, which is fine. It's just not where I stand. Okay, last question. Since you still hold some socially conservative views, even after converting to Catholicism, what were your ethical reasons? I ask since much of social conservatism in the US defends capitalism rooted within the Protestant work ethic, which contradicts with Catholic social ethics. I mean, I think there were a few false notions in the question. I mean, Catholic principles are traditionalist, so you might refer to them as being very socially conservative. And I know it gets more confusing when we have a pope who leans to the left. I hate using the terms like left and right when you're talking about a religious individual or you're talking about morality because it doesn't quite line up, but I think you know what I mean. But that said, the classical teaching of the church has always been a very, I don't know, a traditionalist morality. That's what we mean when we say traditionalist. It's like, yeah, it points to the Catholic understanding of morality. So even though some modern popes and bishops have their own liberal leanings, the church's moral positions are and have been solid. So I don't think that there's any problem between those two. I guess it depends on how some people consider conservatism to be. Like if you consider it to be anti-poor, then like yes, as a Catholic, you have obligations with regard to your neighbor. But I also think that there are plenty of conservatives who aren't anti-poor. That too is sort of like this false understanding of them. They just see very differently how best to help rise the poor out of poverty, which is a different thing. So there's so many false notions in there, but as I mentioned way earlier in this video, and I've been talking for a while now, my voice is starting to go. The Catholic Church is very solid in areas of morality. It's rigid, to use a term that's so often used as a negative. And I think that that is actually what the modern world needs in this time of such moral relativism that's led to, well, just widespread disorder of various types. My politics doesn't lead the way, my faith leads the way, my politics follows after that. But I don't see any, I don't see any contrast, or at least contradiction, between my political views and my faith. If I did, then I would adjust my political views to be in right alignment. But as it is, I don't see that problem. All right, well, I think I've talked for long enough. This will be one of my longer videos, but thank you for listening. If you have more questions about my conversion, about my faith, I'll do my best to answer. Again, not a theologian, but I'll do my best. So you're welcome to put a comment down below. And thank you for listening. Again, this is becoming Catholic was a huge decision. A lot of my life changed after it, and I have no regrets. It was absolutely the best decision that I ever made.